Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Ron DeSantis finally makes his presidential campaign official. The governor's campaign launch on Twitter with Elon Musk has embarrassing technical glitches, and Donald Trump welcomes DeSantis into the race in typical Trump fashion. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing this week with Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns and Palm Beach Post politics reporter Stephanie Matat. But first, well, I lost track of how many times DeSantis' campaign launch crashed, so I can't use that as my number today. But I do have a DeSantis number for launch day, and it's 2,600. We'll see if that rings any bells for our listeners. How about you, Antonio? What's your number?
You know, John's not here, but if he were, he'd say this is the loneliest number. I'm going with one.
Nice. How about you, Stephanie?
I'm really close to Antonio. I got the number 3.
All right. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, DeSantis essentially has been running for president for at least 6 months now with a shadow campaign that includes a book tour across the country. But he finally made it official Wednesday in a filing with the Federal Election Commission and an announcement on Twitter. DeSantis' decision to announce with Elon Musk during a Twitter Spaces event was unconventional, and it was really criticized even beforehand as kind of like overly online and all these things, and a lot of chatter about it. But, you know, there were some potential upsides there, tying yourself to a very famous person and doing something outside the box. But it really started to seem like a terrible miscalculation after the Twitter Spaces live stream kept crashing. We're going to come back to the governor's embarrassing Twitter launch. But first, Antonio, I just want to get your take on where DeSantis stands as he enters this race. He's really been considered sort of the next big thing in GOP politics for a while now. There's all this buzz about him running for president, really going back a year or two, back to some of the CPAC straw polls and things like that. But some of that luster has really faded over the last few months. Do you think he has a realistic chance of knocking off Trump?
Well, Zach, you know, preseason is over, so we're going to find out, and I think we're going to find out very soon. Look, despite all the setbacks, the betting is he does have a shot. Whether he can capitalize on it, whether he could really take on Trump and beat him, that's going to be a very different matter. And I think we're going to find that out pretty quickly, especially if Mr. Trump changes his mind and shows up for that August debate scheduled for Milwaukee. Look, it's not so much about DeSantis. What we've really learned the last 6-7 months is more about Trump than DeSantis in some ways. You know, that Trump again has shown that he is the most tenacious political player that we have ever covered. No one even comes close to him. And that tenacity, that is what draws the MAGA universe to the former president. If you go back to late last fall after he made his announcement in November, remember there was that dinner with the white supremacist, and then there were all these fumbles and people were writing off Trump. And, you know, 5 months later, look where he's at. He is atop just about every poll, and not just at the top of the poll, by many, many digits. I mean, doubled, you know, 28 points in Florida, and according to the FAU poll, and across the country. Now, yeah, we can say it's early. The polls have been suspect. But, man, every poll is wrong? I don't think so. I think we've seen, you know, basically, you know, the former president, despite all these issues, the legal issues and the, you know, the two impeachments and the acquittals by the Senate and the indictment in New York, that he is just this tenacious player. And that's what draws in the entire MAGA crowd to him. Somebody who's going to be a fighter and is going to take on everyone and everything. But look, like I said, it's still very early, and there are a number of legal issues still swirling around Trump, including the documents case from the documents received at Mar-a-Lago last August, then the investigation over the phone call to the Georgia elections officials, you know, when he was challenging the 2020 results with and asking them to fine him 11,000 and odd votes. And, you know, those cases, whatever happens, they're not going to dissuade the Trump faithful. The Trump faithful will be there for him. But the question is, it's going to again raise the issue. Can Trump win a general election? Can he bring over independents and some Democrats enough to win in these states? And, you know, that's what's been the biggest question about Trump in the last couple of months, even as he has surged in all the Republican primary polls, is, okay, but can you win a general election? And that's why Trump kind of keeps flagging every poll out there that shows him beating Biden, the president. And look, the other issue here that we're going to find out pretty soon is just how far to the right does the country really want to go? Or more precisely, just how far to the right do these purple states, the Arizonas, the Georgias, the Michigans, the Pennsylvanias, the North Carolinas, the Virginias, how far to the right do they really want to go? You know, we've seen case after case where voters in the public see the GOP as way too extreme on issues like abortion bans and taking school books off shelves. And polls show that it's not just Trump support for the violent overthrow of a fair election that gives people heartburn, but also his chaotic style. You know, the refrain used to be that DeSantis was Trump without the baggage. The new refrain may be, look, we want the Trump economy without Trump.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's way too early to count out DeSantis. There's been a lot of speculation that his campaign is sort of over before it even started because of some of these national polls and the average of the national polls shows Trump up by 36 percentage points, which seems really daunting if you're DeSantis. I think Trump is polling around 56% of the vote right now, while DeSantis is only at about 20% of the vote. But we don't have national primaries. These primaries are decided in the early states. They're decided in every state, but the early states really take on outsized importance, and you really build momentum throughout the primary contest. So if DeSantis can gain some ground and get a toehold in some of these states, he's definitely got a shot. I read something about how Barack Obama, when he challenged Hillary Clinton in 2008, was polling around where DeSantis was at this time, and that, you know, he had Clinton had this massive advantage over him, and he just slowly chipped away at it and built support and built momentum. Now, I'm not sure that DeSantis has the same political talents as Obama. And, there's been a lot of talk about whether he has the charisma and the ability to inspire people. But we'll see. People grow and change on the campaign trail. But you certainly can't count somebody out at this point. And whatever criticisms people might have of DeSantis, I think it's fairly recognized that he is just relentless. I mean, he's going to go in there and just work and work and work and try and outwork Trump. There was a quote in Time magazine article about DeSantis that just came out where Fiona McFarland, who's actually a state representative, Republican state lawmaker from the Sarasota area, compared DeSantis to the Terminator, and just sort of like he's just not going to stop. You know, if you remember the first Terminator movie, it's just like he gets blown up, he gets set on fire, he gets run over by a truck, and he just keeps going and going. And I do think that DeSantis does have that quality where he's just tenacious. And so we'll see if that pays off. I think it could make a difference in some of these smaller states if you're really go in there and put in the work and try and reach out to you can almost sort of shake hands with every single voter in a state like New Hampshire and maybe to a lesser extent in Iowa. The challenge is that's been tried before. A lot of people have bet their campaigns on some of these small states and just tried to campaign in every county in Iowa and things like that. And it's really not clear, that strategy is like, you know, necessarily the winning strategy when it comes to somebody like Trump, who has such overwhelming popularity within the Republican Party. But we'll see here. I think it will be, there's always ebbs and flows in these political races, and DeSantis is kind of starting at a low point here, but there's certainly room for him to grow. Well, DeSantis didn't kick off his presidential campaign with a big rally in front of an adoring crowd. Instead, he held a live discussion on Twitter with Elon Musk. The governor hoped to make a splash by doing something different and tying himself to one of the most famous people in the world and the second richest, but it ended up being a complete embarrassment because of technical glitches. Stephanie, this was really pretty bad. I mean, it was really quite awkward. I sat through it and it was painful to sit through. It was really like, you know, we here at Gannett use Microsoft Teams and we're always doing these video calls, and I'm sure most people are used to doing video calls for work or conference calls. And it's really sort of like the worst case scenario for one of those where people's audios, you know, dropping out, video dropping out, and then the whole thing just sort of crashed, except that happened 4 or 5 times. And it was really, it took about 20 minutes for them to straighten it out. And then it, like, for me, I just kind of caught, like, it just all of a sudden DeSantis cut in. And he was, it seemed like he was halfway through his speech or somewhere into his speech. And so I'm not exactly sure when he really started speaking or how that all played out. But it was quite the glitch there and multiple crashes, you know, not the narrative that the governor really wanted to see here, you know, as he starts off his campaign, where, you know, he's hoping to use this to really get on a roll. And instead, it sort of makes him look a little bit fumbling here and that they don't have control of their rollout. How bad did he miscalculate by putting his presidential launch in Musk's hands? I mean, you only get one chance to make a first impression, right?
And that's exactly it. You know, you only have one chance to make a first impression. And this glitch was a very, very, very typical one. When I was going through the Twitter spaces, I had a reminder set and I was on it pretty early. And within just a few minutes, I was listening to this muffling and I started to paint my nails. And by the time they got everything up and running, my nails were already dry. So it was very interesting hearing all this muffling, and, you know, it was great to have some background noise as I was painting my nails. But listening to all this, I was thinking, why am I painting my nails? I should be listening to the governor say his presidential bid that he's been waiting to say and that we've been waiting for him to hear for a long time. You know, this has been a very expected announcement, and he had one chance to make that impression. And what was interesting as well is that he chose to make this on Twitter spaces, and then they talked heavily about Twitter. You know, the discussion afterward was also very interesting to me because a lot of it was questions relating to how he was making this launch with the company, but a lot less on his actual presidential bid. You know, he did start off by 30 minutes in. I'd say he eventually started off on his own page and started saying, you know, his bid to the United States, all of his campaign issues, but it was kind of a fluster. You know, I've been seeing a lot of criticism on Twitter. I've been hearing a lot of things, but really, you know, when I saw it, I thought it was a cluster of a lot of information he was really spitting out there. And it really just felt tense at that point. So, you know, this was a broad space like Twitter that was definitely a lot more easily accessible to people. It was, you know, helpful because probably a lot of people don't have cable television anymore. So, yes, it was a lot more accessible. Yes, this reaches a different audience. And, you know, we all know the governor in Florida very well, but a lot of people in other states don't. And this was their first impression. So, you know, it was also a mess because right after former President Donald Trump's campaign immediately put out DeSantis ads, they already had ones prepared before from what we could see, but then immediately put ads, you know, making fun of the situation. And Biden even took his chance to fundraise, you know, saying that this link works on Twitter. So, you know, You're partnering with the guy who's launching rockets. And, you know, he even had this whole Twitter space called Preparing for a Launch. And this launch was unsuccessful. And it was quite glitchy, you know, so it was awkward. And because of all that, it might have really, really diminished what could have been a really strong launch, a really strong put into a presidential campaign, especially a long-awaited announcement.
Yeah, and it's never good when you are sort of a joke. Really, I mean, that's one of the things that can sort of deflate a candidate extremely quickly, as if they are the subject. And you know, not just the typical, obviously your critics are going to, you know, make fun of you and try and cut you down and do all this stuff. And that's really easy for a candidate to shrug off and for a candidate's supporters to shrug off. But when you have something that's so obviously embarrassing and you know why, I mean, even Fox News was calling it a disaster. Everybody on the conservative media was talking about this disastrous launch. So, I mean, this is one of those things where it's just universally viewed as a misstep. I mean, you can't view it as anything else when your presidential announcement doesn't get started for 20 to 30 minutes because you have this giant technological problem. So when you're the butt of jokes like this, that's what people remember. I mean, that sticks in people's minds, and it becomes part of your narrative going forward throughout your entire presidential campaign. And every time you mess up, people are going to be like, oh, look, like, you know, they don't have their act together. And as example number one by this misstep with their presidential launch. So I think it wasn't really DeSantis's fault. It was Twitter's fault, but he put himself in that situation and it just gets stuck on him no matter what. I also think that this sort of undercuts his ability. You know, one of his big selling points is competency, right? He's sort of pitching himself as Trump, but a guy who doesn't have all this drama, who's not shooting himself in the foot, who's very meticulous and well-planned and gets things done. You know, he's out there crossing all the T's and dotting the I's, and he can transform the government in ways that Trump couldn't because he's more disciplined. And it doesn't look like you're somebody who is more organized and disciplined when the first and biggest moment in your campaign is a flop like this. So I think that hurts him as well when you're trying to sell yourself as Mr. Competent and you can't get your campaign launch right. Well, of course, the Trump campaign was gleeful about DeSantis's failure to launch. Trump pounced immediately, writing on Truth Social that, quote, "The DeSantis Twitter launch is a disaster!" Exclamation point. Trump also posted a video on social media of a rocket with DeSantis's name on it exploding on the launch pad. That video was pretty widely shared. Antonio, Trump doesn't need a reason to attack DeSantis. He likes to rip into him no matter what. But the governor's botched launch, I think, will only sort of embolden him and make him think that DeSantis is sort of struggling and he needs to go in for the kill. Do you think DeSantis can handle the heat here?
Well, you know what? Two things here. First, to answer your question, we're going to find out. But I think the bigger question may be, can DeSantis's big donors handle the heat? Now, we've been hearing for some time that these deep pocket Republicans that have put tens of millions of dollars in the DeSantis's coffers and then the ones that really have propelled his candidacy as the next big thing, the one to get behind, they're starting to get some cold feet. Then there's the Rupert Murdoch media empire. Remember when the New York Post called the governor the future back in November after his landslide election? Well, since then, Fox News settled a defamation lawsuit by a voting machine company for nearly $1 billion. After a ton of embarrassing and damaging emails and texts surfaced in which Fox News personalities, on-air personalities, were basically trashing Tucker Carlson was trashing Trump and others were raising questions about all these false claims of election, rigged elections and so forth that have no basis to them. And so all these emails and texts came out and ultimately, Fox News had to settle this case, and they look really weaker now than they did. On top of that, Carlson himself was ousted. So there went, one of the Fox News's primetime stars out the door, and somebody that, conceivably could have touted DeSantis, gotten behind him, and really, brought a lot of the MAGA crowd with them. Now you have Trump going after Laura Ingraham, another Fox News starlet, who has been kind of leaning toward DeSantis. So, what happens with conservative media? Do they get behind Trump? Do they get cold feet on, DeSantis, particularly the Murdoch empire? We're going to find out. But then you have the rank and file voters, you know, the ones who said they liked DeSantis because he was Trump without the baggage. Yeah, well, you know, they don't seem to have that kind of an appetite for DeSantis that they did back in November. Look, we don't know if DeSantis has the mettle to go against Trump, but we also don't know if all of those who were propelling him forward, from the big donors to the media networks to a lot of voters, do as well. And I think that rocket video reminds me something that animated meme that Trump posted on Truth Social last night. I think that reminds me of something that Rick Wilson from the Lincoln Project told me a few weeks ago when I interviewed him. And he said, you know, this is the Trump campaign team is top notch and they're on top of the game. This is not a lot of the problems that Trump has had in the past with, you know, switching campaign chiefs and you know, and just a lot of chaotic and tumultuousness behind the scenes of his campaigns. This one seems to be extraordinarily well run. They jump on things very quickly and very effectively. And that rocket blowing up, that meme that came out so quickly tells you that they're ramped up. They are ready to go. And that's something that I think anybody who's thinking about getting behind DeSantis is going to have to take into account, that you're not just going up against the most tenacious political player, like we said, but you're talking about Trump with a campaign staff and machinery behind them that has been, in the last 5 months, really impressive.
Yeah, Trump has sort of a preternatural ability to exploit his opponents' weaknesses and just find that thing that really kind of undercuts them and just keep chipping away at it. And DeSantis just gave him more material last night there. And I'm sure that Trump is going to run with it and just, you know, continually brand him as a loser or somebody who can't even get his campaign off to a good start. And this just gives him that extra material. Not that I mentioned he didn't really need it. I mean, he is just tearing into DeSantis. And I think that's really the biggest question facing the governor as he kicks off his campaign here is, can he handle it? I mean, nobody has been able to stand up to Trump within the Republican Party yet. Everybody that challenged him in 2016 was defeated, and not just defeated, often humiliated, you know, with humiliating nicknames like Low Energy Jeb and Little Marco and Lion Ted. And then all the Republicans who voted for impeachment were Trump went after them and unseated them, especially Liz Cheney, who he just relentlessly attacked and went and campaigned against until she was out of Congress. And so DeSantis, can he stand up to Trump? That's a huge question. I don't think, you know, there's any historical evidence here that a Republican can take Trump on and be able to punch back against him and respond to his attacks in a way that lands with Republican voters. And it's been tricky for DeSantis before he was a candidate. He seemed to sort of largely ignore Trump or push back sort of obliquely and not really go at him directly. And that's going to be harder and harder now that he's an actual candidate. And it seems like he's still hesitant. He was asked on Fox News sort of how he'll handle the attacks and the name calling and the nicknames. And he used this sort of stock line that he's used before where he said, you can call me whatever you want, just call me a winner, you know, basically saying that, you know, I dominated my reelection win here in Florida and look at what Trump has done over the last few cycles where he lost the presidency. And I don't know, maybe that works with Republican voters. He also kind of sort of said, this is a line he's used before where, well, so many other people have sacrificed more than me, you know, people who have gone to war and things like that. And I can certainly handle this sacrifice. I don't know that portraying himself as sort of this sympathetic figure who is bearing the burden of these attacks to serve his country is it plays. We'll see. But he's also kind of trying to play that angle. So but I think that he's going to get in some of these scraps with Trump, especially when he gets on the debate stage. I mean, that's going to be really interesting. If he gets on a debate stage with Trump, can he go toe-to-toe with him? You know, he had some fumbles in his debate against Charlie Crist, the Democrat who opposed him for governor. And so taking on Trump is 10 times more difficult than that. So, I think that question of how DeSantis responds to Trump's attacks is one that's really lingering. And can he respond in a way that doesn't anger Trump's voters? I'm not sure there is a good way. Well, we'll move on to our numbers here. Stephanie, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, so I chose the number 3. One very important reason could be that we have a 3-day weekend. I'm very excited for that one. But the other reason is more related to DeSantis, that, you know, just last week, DeSantis told donors and supporters on a call that there were only 3 credible candidates in this race, Biden, Trump, and him. And then he said only 2 have the chance to get elected, Biden and him. You know, we've seen throughout this whole presidential 2024 process that DeSantis has really kept a low profile when it comes to any attacks on Trump. And even last night, you know, when we listened to his presidential launch, he really, really made it clear that he wasn't going to say anything, you know, and we've seen different stories as well saying that, you know, Trump, that DeSantis will only respond when it comes to policy. Last night, DeSantis really only put most of his jabs toward Biden. And, you know, Biden has occasionally as well made these targets towards DeSantis and whenever he's come down to visit Florida. But now we really kind of see we're at this point where there's going to be that 2-man race and that's going to be going against Biden. And, you know, I think seeing that from last week, that those 3 candidates who are going to be in that race is going to be very critical to look at for 2024. And it's going to be very interesting to watch how all of this unfolds, especially how DeSantis' team and, you know, their communications is going to be toward Trump. You know, Trump consistently puts out campaign ads and statements and emails all the time, regularly on DeSantis. And we see Trump speeches, you know, they go on DeSantis, they talk about Biden, but really, really focusing on DeSantis. So it's really going to be interesting to see how this unfolds.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, I think DeSantis really wants to make this race about him and Biden and campaign against Biden. We saw that in his announcement speech, or what we heard of his announcement speech last night. But he listed all these Biden policies that he wants to reverse and really focused on attacking Biden, didn't mention Trump. In his mind, he's running against Biden, but Trump is not going to allow that. Trump is going to inject himself. Trump is going to be knocking him off message left and right here, and is not going to allow him to position himself as this guy who's the best one to take on Biden. So whatever DeSantis wants to do, whatever he's trying to do, I think he's going to have to continually deal with Trump knocking him off message. Antonio, how about you? What's your number?
Well, I had 1, and that's for the one parent who complained, and now a book by poet Amanda Gorman, who was featured, if you may recall, at President Joe Biden's inauguration. Her published work of poetry has been removed by a school, this time in Miami Lakes. Look, it seems there's a new book controversy in Florida every week. We've seen books pulled or reviewed or scrutinized, books about baseball legend Jackie Robinson, one of the great baseball players and also who broke the color line in professional sports. And Roberto Clemente, another great baseball legend. Those books came under scrutiny and some were removed. And then, you know, tennis great Billie Jean King and even a version of the Diary of Anne Frank. Now, a common denominator in all of these book controversies is that it's just a few parents, sometimes not even a handful of parents, who are the ones bringing forth the controversy and bringing forth the complaint. And in this case, the one involving poet Amanda Gorman's book, it was just one parent, one mom in Miami-Dade County, who claimed that who had an objection about Gorman's book. And one of her objections was this line, and I'll read it to you. This line, this is her objection. The line reads, "Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished." That's the line that this one mom, Daily Salinas, found objectionable and actually says it fits a criteria of hate speech. Now, the Daily Beast and other news outlets have now reported that this mom, Daily Salinas, is linked to the Monster Liberty group that you have written a lot about, Zach, and also the Proud Boys that we've talked a lot about on this podcast. She's also reportedly a DeSantis backer, and actually one of the media reports suggested that she at one point had recommended a children's book about the governor for Florida schools, all of which these media outlets suggest it raises questions about her motives and why she's bringing forth this complaint. And, you know, look, we haven't confirmed that, so I'll let it go at that. But I think in this case, I think the larger question for each one of us in Florida is this. Is this really the way we want to conduct education policy? Zach, you have kids in the school system. I raised two kids through the Florida public school system. You know, most reasonable parents, yeah, want to know what their kids are reading in schools and want to have a process where if there's an objection or they have a concern about a book, where it can be heard and it can be dealt with in some sort of an educational forum. You know, the conversation that makes things better, that we all come to some understanding, at least a way to say, listen, I have an issue with this book. And, you know, and to be able to determine what your kid reads or not. But the question is, you know, should we allow one parent to determine what all of everybody else's kids reads? And I think that's where you're going to have a lot of people say, hold up, that's going too far. Because you know, to have one or two or three parents decide what the entire Florida school system, you know, allows children to read in schools, I think this is going to be problematic. And this is a key question and one that I'm willing to bet that Governor Ron DeSantis will have to answer more than once now that he's a candidate on the campaign trail.
I'm glad you brought this up, Antonio, because it's a question that came up last night, actually, in the Q&A section of DeSantis's Twitter announcement. I don't remember exactly the details of it, but I think Musk or somebody else was asking DeSantis about this. DeSantis again said that it's a hoax, that, you know, this book ban stuff in Florida is a hoax. And again, I don't remember all the details, but he's basically pushing back against the idea that there's all these book bans. And his campaign and his supporters have provided differing sort of excuses for this. Sometimes, you know, they'll say that, you know, this narrative is just exaggerated. You know, sometimes they'll say that, no, they're only removing, quote, porn from schools. You know, there's different arguments they put forward. But, you know, DeSantis basically just said that the whole narrative of book banning in Florida is a hoax. And it does seem like there are books. You know, the problem is that these decisions are being made by individual school districts. And so it's hard to compile all of this information together and see what is being banned. And, you know, it's not necessarily the state doing it, but it's the school districts are responding to state policies, state guidelines, just the chilling effect that some of the discussions at the state level have had when they're talking about critical race theory or gender issues and things like that. The school districts have absorbed that and started looking at their books. And there's been actual laws passed that have prompted some of this stuff. So it is being prompted at the state level to a large degree, and the school districts are running with it. And there are books that it seems have been flagged or pulled from individual schools or from entire school districts. And so for the governor to call it all a hoax, you know, it seems like there are plenty of examples of this throughout Florida, but it's hard to get your arms around because, you know, they're all sort of individual cases here. And I do agree this is going to continue to be an issue throughout this campaign. It was fascinating, too, the way that Elon Musk responded. He was kind of like, oh, well, I was under the impression that some books had been banned. I'm glad that you told me that they haven't. You know, he didn't push back against the governor at all on this. But it's certainly the case that a lot of books have been flagged throughout the Florida school system. Well,
And the government, the governor may be right, and this is really complicated and everything, but you know what? That's a lot of explaining, and you know what we say on this podcast, if you're explaining, you ain't winning.
Yeah, and the reality is that there are books that are being flagged and removed from some schools. And so to say that it's all just a hoax, it seems like that goes against some of the evidence that's out there. Well, my number is 2,600. That's how many field workers never back down the federal PAC supporting DeSantis plans to have on the ground in the early voting states by Labor Day. That detail was in a New York Times story that published this week, looking at Never Back Down's plans in the early states. It's notable because if DeSantis has a chance against Trump, it rests on winning some of these early caucus and primary contests and building up some momentum that can keep, slingshotting DeSantis through the primary process. To do that, DeSantis is going really all in on Iowa in particular, but also investing heavily in some states like New Hampshire and Nevada that also vote early. His actual campaign kickoff rally is expected to actually be in Iowa next week. There was some reporting that he might have a kickoff rally in Dunedin, which is where he grew up in the Tampa Bay area. But instead, it sounds like he's going to be doing an event in Iowa, not Florida, which sort of tells you something about how important Iowa and these early states are to his strategy. You know, DeSantis may be down in the polls and he might not be the most charismatic candidate, but one thing he has is a heck of a lot of money. You know, he hit Never Back Down currently has around $40 million, but it's expected to get a big infusion of cash from DeSantis's state political committee, which has over $80 million. And all told, Never Back Down expects to spend around $200 million in early state organizing. And they're claiming that they're going to knock on the door of every possible DeSantis donor at least four times. The ground game may be DeSantis's secret weapon, or not so secret weapon. It was detailed in this article, but it only works if his supporters are selling a product that people want to buy. And there's been a lot of question about that, is how strong is DeSantis as a candidate? But there are some signs that primary voters, at least in Iowa, are interested in DeSantis. He's actually doing better in the polls there than nationally. And if he can really close the gap in a state like Iowa to within a few percentage points of Trump, it's game on. And his ground game could really make the difference. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Chandler Hopeful. And thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.